From PRI, Public Radio International, and KCRW Santa Monica, this is To the Point.
Immigration and the 4th of July. Hello again, I'm Armin Alney, and this is To the Point from Public Radio International, a daily look at the issues Americans care about most. President Obama has made an impassioned plea for comprehensive immigration reform, even though there's no chance of action before November's elections. Transparently courting the votes of Hispanics, he bashed the Republicans. But he also addressed all sides of an issue that's polarizing the nation. He wants accountability for the federal government's failures, the greed of employers, and the lawbreaking by undocumented workers. Will his speech help resolve differences or make them worse? Will it stop other states from going the way of Arizona? On Reporter's Notebook later on, the president, Emma Lazarus, and the Statue of Liberty. First, here's the news.
Support for To the Point comes from subscribers of KCRW Santa Monica and from the Public Radio International Program Fund, whose contributors include the Ford Foundation, the John D. and Catherine T. MacArthur Foundation, and the Skoll Foundation, supporting social entrepreneurs around the world, uncommon heroes dedicated to the common good. Learn more at skoll.org.
Hello again, Warren Alney, back with To the Point. As the nation prepares to celebrate the 4th of July, President Obama has called for immigration reform. Did yesterday's speech contain anything new? Will it unify a polarized nation or further divide it? On Reporter's Notebook, the president, Emma Lazarus, and the Statue of Liberty. First, this news update. Private employers added 83,000 jobs last month, more than double the rate in May, and unemployment dropped from 9.7% to 9.5%. Not good enough for the president.
Now, make no mistake, we are headed in the right direction. But as I was reminded on a trip to Racine, Wisconsin earlier this week, we're not headed there fast enough for a lot of Americans. We're not headed there fast enough for me either. The recession dug us a hole of about 8 million jobs deep, and we continue to fight headwinds from volatile global markets.
President, responding to the latest labor statistics, Heidi Sherholtz is labor market economist at the Economic Policy Institute. And Heidi Sherholtz, good to have you back on our program.
Thanks for having me.
When there were more jobs created than there were last month, and when unemployment is down, albeit a little bit, why is everybody so pessimistic?
Yeah, those top line numbers look a lot better than they do when you dig just a little below the surface. So the 83,000 private sector jobs that were added, that's good that we're adding jobs. But that job growth is so slow that it doesn't even keep up with regular growth in the labor force due to regular population growth. We need to be adding more like 200,000, 300,000 jobs every month in order to bring the unemployment rate down within 5 years. So this kind of growth doesn't do anything to really move the dial on unemployment.
There apparently was some sort of an artificial alteration in the picture because of the temporary jobs of so many people hired to help out with the census.
Yeah, that's right. The census hiring has been really buffeting around these numbers the last couple of months, and it's going to continue to do so. So in May, the census had over 500,000 people on their payrolls to conduct the 2010 decennial census, and those jobs will basically all disappear over this summer. So we in June, they shed 225,000 jobs. So it's important when you see the headline number that the economy shed 145,000 or 125,000 jobs in June, it wasn't that bad. With those temporary census jobs, we expected them to go away. The underlying trend is that we are adding jobs right now, but the problem is it is at an excruciatingly slow pace.
When you have a 9.5%, as we do now, is there a hidden factor here because a lot of people aren't looking for work anymore?
That's a very good point. So this improvement that we saw from 9.7 to 9.5% was really in some ways an illusion because we saw over 500,000 workers drop out of the labor force. Those are, you know, we have people who just finally say, listen, I've knocked on every door in my town 10 times. I'm not going back right now. And they, when you stop actively seeking work, you're no longer counted as officially unemployed. So if those workers had not left the labor force and they were in the labor force as unemployed people, the unemployment rate actually would have risen to 9.9% in June. So that improvement can be quickly explained away by an exodus from the labor force. So that's not good news. It's another signal of real weakness in the labor market.
Again, we're talking with Heidi Scherholz, the labor market economist at the Economic Policy Institute. It would appear that the federal stimulus program is now at its end, pretty much. Is this an argument for more federal stimulus?
Yeah, the economic argument for more stimulus is absolutely overwhelming. Right now, as we start to spend down the stimulus, it's like we're handing off the baton to a runner, the private sector, that is just limping along, that can't take that baton and run the race. We absolutely should be doing more from the government side. The political scene is making it extremely difficult. So one of the really key, important, and effective provisions in the stimulus is extensions of unemployment insurance benefits. Those extensions expired at the end of May, and Congress has not been able to get their act together to re-extend those unemployment insurance benefits, which is it's really unfortunate on two levels. So when we let benefits expire for the long-term unemployed, we are leaving these folks to a labor market where there are still 5 unemployed workers per available job. And in addition to that, we are losing the opportunity for really excellent stimulus.
I just want to point out very quickly, because we don't have a lot of time left, the Economic Policy Institute is closely associated with the Obama administration. What about the people that are worried about the deficit?
Yeah, it is an important thing to think about, but not right now. We need to actually spend money now to create jobs, to put us on a path towards growth, get jobs growing so we create taxpayers, we build up profits so businesses can... And then we'll worry about the deficit in a couple of years.
Heidi Scherholz, labor market economist with the Economic Policy Institute. Thanks you very much. In a moment, immigration and the 4th of July. To the point.
To the Point thanks Factiva from Dow Jones for its use of Factiva.com. With news and information from 10,000 global sources, Factiva is a resource for companies whose continued success rests upon timely strategic news on their industry, competitors, and themselves.
We're only back with To the Point. In the aftermath of Arizona's new immigration law, with the prospect of other states passing similar crackdowns, President Obama called yesterday for comprehensive immigration reform from Washington. Here's part of what he said to a largely Hispanic audience.
I'm ready to move forward. The majority of Democrats are ready to move forward. And I believe the majority of Americans are ready to move forward. But the fact is, without bipartisan support, as we had just a few years ago, we cannot solve this problem. Reform that brings accountability to our immigration system cannot pass without Republican votes. That is the political and mathematical reality.
Alex Wagner is White House correspondent for Politics Daily. That's an online news magazine. Alex Wagner, good to have you on our program.
Thanks a lot, Warren. It's great to be here.
It doesn't appear that there's any chance whatsoever that the president is going to get those Republican votes by the election year, by election in November. Was this primarily a political speech?
You know, I think a lot of people were looking at this as, you know, is the White House, is the Obama administration finally playing politics? And I think two things. One, I think this is it was a good move for Obama because it brought him back to his sweet spot, which is being the moral compass in chief. And he did a similar thing with health care, which is sort of outlining the moral argument as to why we need this reform and why now. And I think the president has been sort of entrenched in the muck and mire of, you know, the McChrystal scandal in Afghanistan and the BP oil spill, and this was a way for him to sort of change direction, if only for a day. I think it was also smart because strategically he put the onus squarely on the shoulders of the Republicans. He didn't outline each senator that he'd like to see come to the table on this, but he did mention he mentioned Lindsey Graham, and I believe he mentioned Senator McCain as well. And in that way, really shifted the burden to their side of the table. So I think it was smart. And I think, yeah, to a certain extent was politics, but I do believe that, you know, underpinning all of this is a genuine belief. Obama has a genuine belief that immigration reform has to happen now.
He also mentioned George W. Bush as a Republican who was supportive of comprehensive immigration reform. Here's what Karl Rove has to say. He was, of course, the political guru for President Bush. He said that the president has done nothing to lay the foundation, either last year or this year. He said in the State of the Union address, there were 8,000 words, 38 of which were used to describe what needed to be done on comprehensive immigration reform.
Yeah, I think a lot of people were disappointed that he wasn't more specific on policy recommendations. But at the same time, I think, you know, to his defense, he could have been much more partisan. And he could have, I mean, he insofar as he tried to, you know, strike a bipartisan tone, I think he did. I mean, even on Arizona, he didn't vilify those who are backing, you know, Governor Brewer's measures. He said it's ill-conceived, and he's used the word misguided before. I mean, in terms of inflammatory rhetoric, I didn't see it there in that speech. I thought it was sort of his attempt at a come-to-Jesus moment.
He did address the question of the Arizona law, which, of course, requires in some cases that police officers inquire of people about their immigration status. Here's what he had to say about that.
Into this breach, states like Arizona have decided to take matters into their own hands. Now, given the levels of frustration across the country, this is understandable. But it is also ill-conceived.
Back to Alex Wagner at the White House for Politics Daily. Hasn't he also indicated he's going to sue in order to try to overturn the Arizona law?
Yeah, you know, what's interesting about the speech is he didn't make any mention of the Department of Justice investigation into that matter. And I think that's, again, him trying to sort of sidestep some of the more divisive arguments about the law and take attention away from it specifically and put the focus on broader comprehensive immigration reform. I mean, in a certain way, it's sort of a cat and mouse game. Every time he mentions comprehensive immigration reform, the Republicans talk about border security. So, you know, it's always this sort of constant back and forth and this constant tension where he says, let's not focus, you know, we understand that national security is a priority, but the overarching priority needs to be comprehensive reform, and the Republicans just counter back that, you know, that job number one is securing the border. So it's sort of like just this constant ping pong.
Alex Wagner, again, the White House correspondent for Politics Daily, the online news magazine. The president conceded that it is the federal government's responsibility to cope with immigration. That may have to do with the lawsuit we just talked about. But he also called for accountability from other stakeholders, including undocumented workers.
Finally, we have to demand responsibility from people living here illegally. They must be required to admit that they broke the law. They should be required to register, pay their taxes, pay a fine, and learn English. They must get right with the law before they can get in line and earn their citizenship.
Arturo Vargas is executive director of the National Association of Latino Elected and Appointed Officials. That's headquartered in Los Angeles, NALEO, it's called. Arturo Vargas, good to have you on our program.
Hey, good morning, Warren.
You and others have been waiting for the president to make this speech for a long period of time, and he has indicated from time to time that he wasn't ready for comprehensive immigration reform. What do you think about the speech, and very specifically, what he said just now, what we heard just now, about undocumented workers?
Well, first of all, I thought the speech was well done, long overdue. It was something we have been waiting for since the beginning of his administration. He last spoke to our organization at our national conference in June of 2008 and made a commitment to us there that comprehensive immigration reform would be one of the top priorities of his administration. Here we are now halfway through his first term, and finally we have a major speech on it. As for his comments on what the undocumented need to do to get right with the law, I think the undocumented are ready for that. They're asking for an opportunity to legalize their status, and I think they'll be willing to do whatever penalties come with that, whether it's paying their taxes and paying fees. Certainly they want to learn English. Everybody gets it. If you want to make it in this society, you want to have a decent job, you need English. What we need are opportunities for people to learn English. I think they're ready for that. They were even ready for the 2007 legislation that failed in the Senate. They were willing to take that deal, which in many respects was really horrible policy.
Where do they get the money to pay the taxes and the fees?
Well, that's going to be difficult for many people, and it's something that I think people will be willing to make sacrifices just to be able to come out of the shadows.
Do you think that there will be necessarily, if the kinds of things that the president talked about occur, a number of people who have to go back to their home countries?
I think that would be impractical to have people do some kind of pitchback or go back to the countries and then reenter the United States. I think we're talking about individuals who have laid down family roots already, who have children here, who have made their lives here. And for some children, this is the only country they know. And I think we need to be practical about the situation in which we find ourselves here with 11 million people living in the shadows. That's not good for our economy. We want them out of the shadows. We want them in jobs where they can pay taxes and contribute to the economy fully.
Again, we're talking with Arturo Vargas, who's executive director of the National Association of Latino Elected and Appointed Officials. What about demands that the federal government do more to secure the border? The president insisted that the controls are tighter than ever.
Even as we are committed to doing what's necessary to secure our borders, even without passage of the new law, there are those who argue that we should not move forward with any other elements of reform until we have fully sealed our borders. But our borders are just too vast for us to be able to solve the problem only with fences and border patrols. It won't work.
Stephen Camerata is director of research at the Center for Immigration Studies. That's a nonpartisan think tank favoring tighter restrictions on immigration. Stephen Camerata, good to have you back on our program.
Thanks for having me back.
Did you think that the president made a pretty good point by saying that the borders are as secure as they're going to be? We've got more boots on the ground there, he indicated, than ever before. Crime is down. Illegal immigration is down. Were you persuaded by that argument?
Well, it's certainly true that we have more Border Patrol agents than we had in the past, though a couple things are important to recognize. He chose not to finish building the fence that Congress had originally authorized, and his original budget actually cut the number of Border Patrol agents by over 100. He then submitted a supplement that increased it. And the other thing to remember, of course, is the increase in Border Patrol, of course, has occurred mostly before he came into office. But there's certainly the case that we've done more at the border. Now, of course, large sections of the border remain wide open and easy to cross. And, you know, as far as we can tell, hundreds of thousands of people successfully enter the United States each year. But it's better than it was. And but I do think that the people at the border, a very large fraction, are deeply dissatisfied. And, you know, there's certainly lots of reasons to think that hundreds of thousands of people still, you know, cross the border successfully.
Not so easy to cross the border. A lot of people die trying to do it, and apparently illegal immigration is down. But what about the broader point that you can't really solve the problem just at the border?
Well, I think that's certainly true. I think everyone recognizes that you would need several things. We think about 40% of illegal immigrants overstay temporary visas. And yet this administration, and in fairness the two previous, still have not created, which was originally envisioned over, about two decades ago, an entry-exit system. So we don't even keep track of the time limits that we issue. In other words, we give out millions of time-limited visas every year, but then we don't keep track of when people come and goes to make sure that that's the case. And, of course, we all know that the centerpiece of your interior enforcement strategy would have to be a employer verification system, you know, where you could verify that new hires were authorized to work in the United States. And again, literally 25 years after that was originally conceived of in the mid-1980s, all we have now is a voluntary system. Again, he could move forward on that as well. So it's certainly correct to say that you can't do everything at the border, but the other things that you could do, entry, exit, getting more cooperation with local law enforcement, and especially worksite enforcement, you know, we haven't done either. all those things in tandem could make an enormous difference. If you just do the border, yeah, that's certainly going to be inadequate.
Stephen Camerata, once again, at the Center for Immigration Studies. Arturo Vargas, back to you with the National Association of Latino Elected and Appointed Officials. You said that undocumented workers are ready to pay taxes, pay fees, and learn English. What about the kinds of other measures, some of them 25 years old, that aren't being enforced by the federal government, listed by Stephen Camerata? Are you ready for that?
Well, I think we're ready for a system of laws that makes sense. And that there are some laws that we have that really have contributed to the kind of immigration crisis we have. You know, there is no regular way to enter and exit the country, as Stephen mentioned. And I think the whole point of comprehensive immigration reform is to put in place a system of laws that makes sense in terms of meeting the employment needs of this country, keeping families together, which just strengthens our society when families are together and strong. And that's what is involved in comprehensive immigration reform.
Would you be willing to see, then, a greater enforcement at the workplace?
Well, if we have a system that works, then we wouldn't need to get into more draconian measures. If everybody in this country who is in this country has authorization to work, then I think, you know, we have a system that would help the economy. Right now, obviously, employers are getting away with not being able to getting away with hiring people who are not authorized to work here. And in many ways, those people are being exploited and abused. Some of them are not even being paid for the hours of work that they perform because they're undocumented and are afraid of reporting that to the authorities. Nobody wants that situation, and we need to correct that.
What about the idea of getting more involvement by local officials?
Well, just looking at Los Angeles, you know, the LAPD, I think, has a great policy towards that. They know they're not here to enforce federal laws. They need the cooperation of the entire public to make sure that we have a safe community. Anytime people would fear contact with police, I think that undermines the public safety. And I think public safety needs to be foremost. And yet another reason why we need to regularize people's status.
We're going to go to a break in a moment. We'll have both of our guests and others as well flesh out their ideas. But quickly, Stephen Camerata, a lot of local police chiefs say they don't want that kind of responsibility. They don't think that they'll be able to enforce the law because people will be driven away from reporting crimes.
Well, let's just take the case of Los Angeles. They actually have a situation where if a police officer sees a gang member that he knows has previously been deported back on the street, he is not allowed to inform the Immigration Service. All across the country where they have similar laws, there's been these terrible incidents in Newark, for example, or Virginia Beach, where someone who'd been previously held or was aware that the police were aware that he was in the country illegally, terrible incident in San Francisco, and they didn't inform the Immigration Service, and then that person went on to kill someone. Now, in terms of what the police chiefs say, the chiefs of the big cities generally respond to the interest group pressure and say, hey, you know, we don't really like this. But like, for example, in Arizona, the police union there was in favor of that.
But some of the chiefs were opposed to it. The chief in Tucson was against it.
Right. The chiefs were the officers on the beat generally like it. The chiefs don't.
Okay. We're going to be right back in a moment. Continue this conversation on Reporter's Notebook, the President, Emma Lazarus, and the Statue of Liberty. And also, tell us what you think on our To the Point Facebook page. Back in a moment with To the Point from PRI.
A complete archive of past programs is available online at kcrw.com/to the point. You can also order a CD copy by calling 1-888-600-5279.
Warren Olney back with To the Point, once again talking about the president's speech yesterday, raising the issue of comprehensive immigration reform, even though nobody thinks it has a chance of getting through the Congress by the November elections. I want to go back to Stephen Camerata, the director of research at the Center for Immigration Studies, nonpartisan think tank favoring tighter restrictions on immigrations. What's your overall judgment of the speech and the president's position right now? Do you think, as our first guest, Alex Wagner, indicated, that he really does have changes in policy in mind?
Oh, I think he's very sincere. But, you know, it was just mostly a cliched-filled speech that that didn't really give us anything. No announcement of a new sort of legislative package, no details on that bill. He could have actually, there's some administrative things he could do to, say, unilaterally grant a form of amnesty to some illegals, didn't announce that. He didn't even announce that the Justice Department was, in fact, going to sue over the Arizona law. He just sort of said the same old, same old. In other words, you could have just cut everything that he said at this speech out of another speech and sort of pasted it in there. So he didn't give us anything new. He made the same argument. And probably the most one of the things he said politically that was interesting is he tried hard to put the onus on the Republicans, but of course it's deep divisions within his own party that really prevent him from moving forward. He just didn't mention that.
Arturo Vargas, back to you with the National Association of Latino Elected and Appointed Officials. Do you agree with that? Does he have as much trouble with Democrats, given the fact particularly that he has a majority in both houses, as he does with Republicans?
Oh, I think there is a great deal of truth to that. I think there are many Democrats who are afraid of this issue. That's why you do not see this legislation moving in the House. And Speaker Pelosi has deferred to the Senate, saying that legislation has to first emerge from the Senate, not wanting to put at risk some of her Democrats in swing districts. But I think what is being overlooked here is what this is doing to the Latino electorate. You know, we recently conducted a poll of 400 Latino registered voters in four different states, so a total of 1,600. And it's becoming clear that this issue is really motivating Latino registered voters to participate in November's elections. And any party that wants to be the majority party in this country will necessarily have to include Latinos in the fold. And I really don't see how the Republican Party strategy of not moving on this is going to help them become a majority party. We know what happened after 187 here in California.
187 was a passed by the voters, indicating that there should be no public services given to children of undocumented workers or to the undocumented workers themselves, and it was thrown out by the court.
That's right. That's right. And it's similar to what we're seeing again in Arizona, and there are now similar efforts in Arizona to use this opportunity to encourage legal permanent residents to naturalize. And we know something we know about naturalized Latino citizens is that when you have someone who's naturalized, you have a voter. And that really has helped change a lot of the politics here in California.
Okay, I want to get back to that issue. First, one more stakeholder group of a very important nature to be considered. Once again, the president asked for accountability from government and from illegal immigrants. He said this about businesses that hire undocumented workers.
That's why businesses must be held accountable if they break the law by deliberately hiring and exploiting undocumented workers. We've already begun to step up enforcement against the worst workplace offenders, and we're implementing and improving a system to give employers a reliable way to verify that their employees are here legally.
Tamar Jacoby is president of Immigration Works USA. That's a pro-immigration business advocacy group. And Tamar Jacoby, good to have you on our program.
Nice to be here.
Just a moment ago, Stephen Camerota said the government is not doing what the president just said it was. What's your take?
Well, the president has this Jen Napolitano's Department of Homeland Security has significantly stepped up its actions against offending employers. In the old days, in the Bush administration, the tactic of choice were showy raids. Agents came in riot gear, literally, and rounded up workers. Jen Napolitano has switched to an audit model where people with green eye shades come and take away your employment records, your I-9 forms, and audit them, and then come back and tell you that you have to fire workers. And they're doing into the several thousands of those audits a year now, and making a big difference. And, you know, from the point of view of, I represent employers, but I represent employers who want to be on the right side of the law and want a system that works so that they can hire people legally. And we're glad to see employers who are deliberately breaking the law and whose business model involves hiring unlawful workers and underpaying them and exploiting them, I'm glad to see them get discovered by the government and made to obey the law.
In addition to the kind of exploitation you talk about, mentioned earlier by Arturo Vargas, is it also giving them a business advantage if they can hire cheaper workers?
Well, of course it does. The truth is that most employers who hire unlawful workers, even just relying on Social Security Administration evidence alone, most employers who hire unlawful workers are trying to be on the right side of the law, are going through the system, are reporting the income, are paying taxes on the income, are withholding taxes. According to the SSA, upwards of 75% are going through that process. So we're talking about less than a quarter, and my estimate, just based on some other things, is that we're talking about 15% are the guys who are deliberately exploiting them, paying them, you know, less than minimum wage and not allowing them bathroom breaks. But the overwhelming majority of employers are saying the system is terrible now. We don't have a legal way to hire the workers we need. We want a legal way. That's why they're clamoring for reform. Give us a reform that has some more worker visas in it, and we'll conform. We'll do whatever you need us to do to verify that the people we get are actually legal.
Tamar Jacoby again with Immigration Works USA. Back to Stephen Camerata with the Center for Immigration Studies. What about the audits, the people with the green eye shades? You're not satisfied with that?
No, I think that could be, unfortunately, he ended what was having some pretty significant impacts and were important, was the worksite enforcement actions, the raids. But on the other hand, they stopped that. But then they did this other thing where they do the audits. And I think that done with in concert with the worksite enforcement actions and several other things could have been, you know, quite helpful. So it's kind of like, you know, you take one step forward and you take one step back. As I indicated, for example, they actually cut the number of Border Patrol agents originally. They did some other things. The number of criminal prosecutions is down of employers. The other thing they did was they made a decision not to appeal the non-match letter. It was hung up in the Ninth Circuit. The Bush administration had considered some modification to the policy that would have, you know, satisfied the Ninth Circuit. This was a system whereby employers would be told if their worker had a Social Security number that didn't match Social Security records. The administration decided not to go ahead with that. They still do a bunch of other things, and as I indicated, we still don't have an entry-exit system. We still don't have mandatory employer verification. We still have a situation in which we order people deported and then never follow it up. We simply send them a letter, which in the trade issues referred to as the run letter. But of course, even if you don't run, you know, they don't come looking for you. There's a total of 700,000, but we think 500,000 people have actually been ordered deported in recent years, but they just never left the country. The administration's done nothing to change that. But in fairness, neither did the previous two. So the list kind of goes on and on. So, yeah, they do some more audits, and that's a useful thing, and that's an important step, and they can do more of that. But they do. There's the way I would guess I would phrase it is the United States has failed to take even the most elemental steps necessary to enforce the law. And politically, you know, this is his biggest impediment. Although I don't think it's a good idea, I think the public might be willing to go along with an amnesty if they thought the law was going to be enforced. But they don't believe it, and they're right not to believe it. You know, we had an amnesty 25 years ago. The law was supposed to be enforced after that, but it hasn't, and there's every reason to believe that if you passed an amnesty and then said, no, but this time, really, we promise to enforce the law, it would take forever to get that implemented. A, there'd be bureaucratic resistance. There'd be a political battle. And everything is, of course, going to end up in the courts anyway. Every enforcement step would endanger a lawsuit from the ACLU and others. So that's why enforcement has to come first, because it's administratively challenging, it's politically challenging, and the legal challenges all have to be met, and that's going to take years. And if we have an amnesty, the illegal immigrants get their legal status and put on their path to citizenship, and enforcement will again languish.
Tamar Jacoby, back to you with Immigration Works USA. Stephen Camerata uses the term amnesty, as do others who are on his side of this issue. What's your take on that? And more broadly, what about the president's speech?
Well, you know, I don't think as a country we, the I think the public understands there are at least 11 million unlawful immigrants here. Who knows if that really is the number? It's not realistic for the country to round them up and deport them. And I don't think we really want to live, despite the support for the Arizona law. The Arizona law is very popular. 60-70% of the public like it. I'm not sure that what the public really envisions is that we're going to harass the unlawful people who are here now until they go home, which is what Stephen Camerota would say we should do. Attrition through enforcement is the alternative. So you really have three possibilities. You have some way for people to earn their way to legality. That's one possibility. Deport them is another possibility, and Stephen Camerota's supposed middle way would be harass them until they leave. I think of those three choices, really the only plausible one for America, because of what it would cost and because of our values, is to offer people a way to get, as the president put it, to get right with the law. I don't see it as an amnesty, because I don't think we're waving a wand and saying Ali Ali in free. We're actually making them go through a pretty arduous program to make restitution, really, for having done something wrong, admit they did something wrong and make restitution for it. I don't see that as amnesty. I think it's really the only course. But the one piece we haven't talked about, reform, and I'm coming back to the president's speech, enforcement is critical. Much tougher enforcement in the workplace and on the border. Some answer for the 11 million is critical. But even more important, the most important piece, so that we don't just end up in the same place 10 or 20 years from now, is a way for the workers we're going to need in the future, as the economy now and as the economy recovers, to come here legally. We need high-end people. We need scientists and entrepreneurs and engineers. We need farm workers, as the president pointed out. Not very many Americans want to work on farms anymore. Americans are more and more educated. And we also need construction workers, hotel workers, kitchen workers, low-end unskilled workers. Americans now graduate from high school, don't want that kind of outside, hard, physical work, and we still need people to do that kind of work. And that's the piece, troublingly, that the president left out.
Did you have something more? I didn't mean to interrupt you.
Well, I thought, you know, the president gives a good speech. So the speech as people have said, it didn't have a lot new in it. And it was, you know, they were surprised at the president reading the Emma Lazarus poem. That's a pretty, you know, that's not the most imaginative trick in the book for a speech on immigration. But I thought it was a pretty good speech as a speech. The problem is that it looked more like a political gambit than a real policy step forward. I think it was far too much blaming and scolding Republicans. As you've pointed out, there aren't enough Democrats to pass reform at this point. If they introduced reform, I don't think it would get a simple majority in either House because there are not enough Democrats. So to blame Republicans is really, you know, kind of cheesy. And the most important from my point of view, I think the president should have reached out to the 60-70% of the public that supports the Arizona law. And he did say, you know, there was a line in there for them, but I really think the whole speech should have been directed at them. And he should have said, look, the Arizona law split the country down the middle. You know, those of you who support it, you know, for better, not this phrase, but I feel your pain. I understand your frustration. Join me in working toward a tough but fair reform. And the trouble is, I mean, there were a few lines for those people, but most of the speech was really directed at his base.
Okay. As we heard earlier, what he said was, into this breach, the breach left by the federal government, states like Arizona have decided to take matters into their own hands. Given the levels of frustration across the country, this is understandable, but it is also ill-conceived. You don't think that was enough?
I don't. I think he shouldn't have been, you know, that he's criticized the law. And I don't think he should be suing Arizona over the law.
Right.
I think he should be reaching out to those people.
Stephen Camerota, back to you on a couple of points. I certainly want to talk about some way to get workers to the country legally, both high-end and low-end. But is attrition through enforcement, is that, in fact, as Tamar Jacoby suggested, your idea the right way to go?
Well, certainly I think the wrong way to go is to repeat the mistakes of the past. What did we do in the past?
We amnestied about 3 million.
No. Okay, but is that what you want to do?
Yeah, and we've dramatically increased legal immigration since the 1980s. The number of unskilled immigrants allowed into the country is roughly double what it was. The number of green cards has doubled, and we've created the H-1B, the H-2A, H-2B program. So we allow in tremendously more people than we used to. And so what that does is it spurs more illegal immigration by creating new social networks. I mean, that's certainly been the past. So I think the first step is to show that we're serious about the rule of law. And that would mean all some of these things I've outlined, entry-exit system, going after the employers. The illegal population has declined by 1 million, according to the government, in the last 2 years. That's a good start. Let's see if we can continue that process. Okay. Let's see if we can get it to decline again.
What about a way for workers to come to this country legally, both at the high end and at the low unskilled level particularly, which really is what we're talking about?
Well, remember, we have 28 million legal immigrants we've already allowed into the country. Each year we give 1.1 million green cards. That's permanent immigration of people. And about 600,000 or 700,000 people get long-term temporary visas to come in and work in the United States. So the level of legal immigration is already enormous to the United States. And that's one reason why we get so many illegal immigrants, because that creates the social networks that then pull more illegal immigrants in. So the other thing is just a quick statistic. Unemployment among less educated Americans who work in construction, who work in building, cleaning, and maintenance, who work in food service and preparation and light manufacturing, where they compete with illegals for jobs, is about 20%. It's an enormous slap in their face, the people who do most of these jobs, to say, let's bring in more workers and increase their job competition.
Okay,
wages and benefits and employment are down at the bottom end of the U.S. labor market. Even before the recession, now they're a disaster.
Arturo Vargas, back to you, National Association of Latino Elected and Appointed Officials. What do you say to that and the argument in general that illegal workers are taking jobs that Americans want?
Well, I think Tamar Jacoby laid out the fact that there are many jobs in this economy that Americans don't want. You know, they don't want to be changing people's bedpans and doing hotel work and so forth. And we are having a much more educated society, an economy that's going more towards an information society, and there are going to be high-end jobs for that, but there's still going to be low-skilled jobs needed. And if we look at other countries, we see birth rates declining and the need for immigrant workers rising, and it's going to happen in this country as well. We just need to be prepared to make sure that we continue to be a strong society.
What about Tamar Jacoby's point that the president ought to have spoken more directly, more sympathetically to those 60% of Americans who seem to support the Arizona law?
Well, I think had he done that, that would have been good politics, because we need the support of the public to try to pressure Congress to get this job done. And had those 60-70% of the public that supports the Arizona law turned around and forced Congress to act, hopefully we could get this job done.
Very quickly, Stephen Camerata, we're short of time, but Arturo Vargas said earlier that Hispanics are becoming a much more important political cohort of this country than they have been in the past. That's certainly true, whatever happens with regard to immigration reform. Are Republicans, do you think, making a mistake by taking the kind of position they are? Should they be trying to work out, perhaps with some of the suggestions that you've made yourself, to try to reach compromises rather than just saying no deal?
No, I think the compromise position is not legalizing everyone and not trying to deport everyone a week from next Tuesday.
No, the question is about the Republicans.
Enforcing the law. I mean, the
question is about the Republicans. Are they making a political mistake by not trying to arrive at some kind of consensus?
Well, here's the thing. I think that is the middle ground. So it depends on what you think about the consensus. And demographically, remember that Hispanics are about 8 or 9% of the vote. And say, if you want to engage in a kind of racialized analysis, and whites are 80% of the vote, if you lose 1% of the white vote, you have to offset it with 10 percentage points of the Hispanic vote. So
okay,
for the
Tamar
Republican
Jacoby,
Party, it doesn't really make sense to alienate most Americans to do something that's really popular with the Hispanic elite, but it's not clear this is what Hispanic voters want.
Tamar Jacoby, back to you, representing businesses often thought of as more sympathetic to the Republican Party than to the Democrats. Do you think Republicans are making a mistake?
I think Republicans very much need to engage this issue. You're absolutely right. And I believe that if Republicans come back With a stronger hand in both houses of Congress next year, I think you may well see them doing exactly what you suggest,
okay,
engaging and saying, we've got to solve this problem, we've got to get it off of our demerit list with Latino voters. And so I'm actually hopeful that early 2011 could be the moment when Republicans want to do it, the president needs to do it, the economy starts to look better, and maybe we could even get it done.
Tamar Jacoby, Immigration Works USA, Stephen Camarada, Center for Immigration Studies, Arturo Vargas, National Association of Latino Elected and Appointed Officials, our earlier guest, Alex Wagner of Politics Daily. Thanks to you all very much. At the end of his speech, the president invoked the Statue of Liberty and the poet Emma Lazarus, whose famous poem beckons immigrants to America's shores. In the moment, the president and the history on To the Point.
For more information about To the Point or to sign up for the free podcast, visit kcrw.com/to the point.
Werman Olney back with Reporter's Notebook on To the Point. The family of Jewish poet Emma Lazarus fled persecution in Europe, and she crusaded for better health care and housing for immigrants in the United States. In yesterday's speech, President Obama said she donated work to pay for the Statue of Liberty, which he said was founded in part by small donations from people across America.
Years before the statue was built, years before it would be seen by throngs of immigrants craning their necks skyward at the end of a long and brutal voyage, years before it would come to symbolize everything that we cherish, she imagined what it could mean. She imagined the site of a giant statue at the entry point of a great nation.
President Obama speaking yesterday, of course, about immigration reform. Barry Marino is a librarian and historian at the Statue of Liberty National Monument and the Ellis Island Immigration Museum. Thank you very much for joining us.
My pleasure.
Don't know what the president's intention was, but it made it sound, at least from that soundbite that we just read, that Emma Lazarus was sort of the originator of the Statue of Liberty.
Oh, well, that certainly would not be accurate in the least. She certainly had no role in that. In fact, she certainly had nothing to do with the creation or the creation or development of the statue. She was a contributor. She was helping to raise money to build the statue's pedestal at one point in the fundraising campaign. And that's and so she has a little appearance there, and she significantly wrote that poem, The New Colossus, you know, Give Me Your Tired, Your Poor, welcoming the immigrants to America in the voice of the Statue of Liberty, cast as the mother of exiles. And she wrote that in November of 1883, and the next month that poem was auctioned off, along with other items, to raise money for the pedestal. So she made a good contribution, but by no means was she signal or major in the creation of the statue.
Who was?
There were two men. One was called Laboulaye, Edward Laboulaye, a French scholar who was a follower of the ideas of Alexis Tocqueville, and he was very interested in democracy in America, and he wanted to celebrate America's continuing freedom and democracy, and so he proposed building a monument, a gift to the American people, and he enlisted the help of a great sculptor, Frederick Auguste Bartholdi, and Bartholdi designed the statue, and he sculpted it. And then they had to, because he wanted it to be a gigantic lady, a gigantic goddess, really, he had to bring in a firm of builders to construct this gigantic statue out of copper and iron. And she was built in Paris.
Built in Paris and shipped across the Atlantic Ocean to the United States, but primarily, you're saying, not to celebrate immigration, but celebrate democracy.
That is precisely right. The Statue of Liberty was built to celebrate the friendship of the United States of America and France, going back to the American Revolution, and to celebrate the friendship of George Washington and the Marquis de Lafayette in achieving American independence. And also she was to celebrate America's constitutional democracy, America as a free nation, a republic. And those are the primary elements of this this statue.
How long did it take before Emma Lazarus's poem was actually more involved in the statue itself?
Well, you know, that she was almost ahead of her time, because while the statue was rising on Bedloe's Island in New York Harbor, in 1886, being constructed here, immigrants were coming on ships, mostly steamships across the Atlantic, and they, thousands of them crowded on steerage decks, and they would see the great statue, and to them, of course, they see this gigantic goddess of liberty, which takes the form of a Roman goddess, and they recognized this classical work of art, and in the form of a person, or a woman, a lady, or a goddess. And so they were very moved. And so the immigrants were responding to the vision of this Statue of Liberty, and they conceived her in their own terms. And I think Emma Lazarus realized this. She realized the impact of the statue, what she would have on immigrants. Because, you know, Emma, as was stated, she was interested in the plight of refugees entering New York. And that was, she was concerned, like you said, health care, sanitation, suffering, and she was kind of ahead of her time. So she helped to, she's one of those people that helped to kind of transform or give the statue an added meaning.
When was her poem actually inscribed on the statue?
Well, in 1903, years after her death, the poem, which had been forgotten, was inscribed on a tablet, and that tablet was given to the caretakers of the Statue of Liberty in 1903 and then was put up on the wall, and years later was put near the elevator so tourists could pause to read it.
All right. A little bit of a historical, I don't suppose it's correction, but elaboration from Barry Marino, a librarian, historian at the Statue of Liberty National Monument and the Ellis Island Immigration Museum. Many thanks to you.
My pleasure. Thank you.
Producers of To the Point, Francis Anderton, Christian Bordahl, Andrea Brody, Katie Cooper, Daryl Satzman, Gary Scott, Technical Director Mike Newp, Wesley Roberts, Managing Producer Karen Radziner. Special thanks to Julia Fluch. Thanks also to the John Coltrane family. You can email us or share your thoughts on our comment page, kcrw.com/To the Point. Check out To the Point on Facebook. I'm Warren Olney. Join us again for To the Point, produced live and podcast as a co-production of KCRW Santa Monica and Public Radio International.
PRI, Public Radio International.